Hello.
Last one.
Oh, am I? Between you and the break?
No, actually. It's your last
one. Oh, my last one. Yeah, ever. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's right. First, actually, I got some feedback that some people thought I was harsh on 2543 or 3061 on the secure call ID draft. I don't mean any offense to any of the authors or anything of that. Obviously, those are very large RFCs, and I wasn't claiming it was dumb what they did or anything of that nature. It was a mistake that we, you know, I think we found over time we shouldn't have done it. But anyway, so updates to the asserted identity in SIP. The setup of this. So 30 through 25 only specified 6 specific methods for PII, PPI inclusion. We have this draft SIPing update PII 09, which updates 30 through 25 to include PII in any SIP request method type, but it does not include it in SIP responses for those requests for the new method types. So who cares? Well, it would actually be nice to get those PII in responses in some cases. If you make a call to PSTN, for example, you'd like to know the call and party identity. You don't actually need to get an update in the other direction to do that. Now, currently, PII does work for invite because that was in the original one, and responses for invite because that was in the original one, and I don't want that to change, but also there are other reasons for the newer method types, including sending a message note, you'd like to know who received it, and sending a publish package, you'd like to know who or what got it. So the background, 3325 did actually explicitly allow PII in responses. It actually had a section on this. If the proxy receives a message from node to trust, it can use the information in the PII header, if any, as if it had authenticated the user itself. But it was pulled out of the update PII draft because, I believe, because of concern over not being able to authenticate the responses over the ACK or cancel. So why should we allow it? Well, I try to say it in the draft. I don't want to go, you know, repeat the whole draft here, but essentially, it's mostly only useful within the trust domain because you don't have to authenticate anything in a trust domain, according to PAI. It's in a trust domain. And for pre-authenticated UACs, in other words, one where you have some lower-level authentication, such as TLS, for example, it could be useful as well. And those things are basically the case for PAI to begin with. And there are also other potential means of authenticating in response. I have another draft I have not presented, but I have another draft which should, in theory, allow for authentication of responses for the asserted identity. So I don't know if there's any interest in this. There wasn't much working group mailing list discussion, except for some false identities in the mailing list. And I created some fake accounts to generate some interest on it. If the working group accepts this, we can modify it before publication. Or if not, I don't know what I want to create a working group for such a small change. But I don't know if there's I could go the individual draft route too. I'm not that opposed to that either. I mean, in case you don't know, this whole thing is informational because PII itself is informational. It was never a standards track. However, it is fairly popular. Yeah.
Dean Willis, sir. Go back up to the slide that explains about the trust domains. But okay, so history. The reason it was pulled out here is because the trust domain that was discussed in the model was presented in the context of one that was maintained via digest authentication. So you really couldn't tell whether you were in the trust domain or not on the response when digest authentication was used. And it wasn't really the consensus within the working group to take it out at the time. It was driven through security area review that said, thou shalt not do this given this model. Now, you could do this sort of thing in responses, but you would have to document a different trust domain model and put a different utilization statement on the front of the pre-asserted whatever draft in order to get it through that sort of process.
Right. So, but I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe when I read update PII, the digest authentication is used for actually when the endpoint is, or the device is outside of the trust domain, and needs to be authenticated, therefore. I'm not proposing this be used for when it is outside the trust domain, because it can't be authenticated. I'm proposing that for devices that are within the trust domain, which are things like gateways and servers and other such devices, that the responses from them be
In the absence of some other mechanism, you do not know that that device is within the trust domain. You can't authenticate based on its IP address. It doesn't have TLS. It could be from anywhere else. It could be from bogus hosts inside your network.
And that is the nature of PAI to begin with, right? That's the nature of RFC 3320. That's like saying, well, the 3325 mechanism is unsafe. It is unsafe.
No, because PAI on the forward direction required an authenticated transaction.
Not in 3325, not within the trust domain. That's the clear distinction. When you're within a trust
3325
domain,
defines a policy model which sets up a trust domain which is based on digest authentication. It says you could use other things that have similar properties, but it doesn't talk about using things that have dissimilar properties of being able to authenticate responses, which is what you need to put in a response. That's why they wouldn't let it through. I personally don't care, but that's the history.
Thank you. Keith, then you have
Keith Trage. There isn't actually anything that denies the existence of this at the moment, as far as I understand. 3325 is vague on the subject. In some cases, it assumes there is a response. In other cases, it doesn't. And my view is certainly people are certainly using it in responses, and it's allowed. Update PAI, as far as I know, doesn't change that situation. They pulled out all the text altogether that referred to any usage in responses. So it leaves the same level of vagueness there, as far as I know.
Is that true, John?
I'm sorry, what was it?
Mr. Elwell.
John.
Yeah. He's nodding his head.
Huh.
Yeah. So just coming back to what Dean was saying, I mean, I don't agree with Dean if I understood what he was saying. Essentially, you can have a UA within the trust domain, and there are no security problems, providing it is within the trust domain. So something like a gateway to the PSTN, you can define to be within your trust domain, and there are no security issues, apart from using a trust domain in the first place.
So your reading of the update to the PAI currently is that it actually doesn't restrict allowing them in the responses.
It's totally neutral as to what happens to whatever 3325 said about it being in
for responses. For the request defined in that, but not for the new methods?
Correct. John, can you go to the microphone and answer the question, please, for us? Yeah.
Me?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I thought Jonathan was next. What was I going to say? First of all, on trust domains, until you've authenticated something, you don't know whether it is within the trust domain or not. Mm-hmm. You first of all authenticate it, then you say, right, am I in the trust domain or not?
Yep.
And then based on that, you might decide to trust the assertion. So it all goes back to the problem of authenticating it. Now, I would love to see this go ahead, but I don't see that we're any closer to convincing the security powers that be that we can at least give one example of how, with existing standards, we can authenticate the responder. So if you can solve that, I'd happily support it.
So authenticating the responder, or the requester for that matter, in this model, PSTN gateway model, does not authenticate the actual from it's using, because the username is not its own, right? It's an E164 that is global in scope. You're only authenticating that as a hop. Now, when you sent in the response case, you sent it the request. If it's lying to you, you're done. You sent it to it. You are not getting it from somewhere else. You have to authenticate when you get it from somewhere else. But you are knowingly sending it to a device in your trust domain. It should be challenging you, if anything, but you are sending it to it.
You think you send it to there, but do you know that that is what received it and responded?
Do you know the challenge response didn't have a middleman? I mean, you know, yes.
I'm on your side.
I know. We are, agreed. You're right. I know. We're all in vehement agreement, I think, that,
Jonathan.
Yeah, so I think
you're right.
I do want to, I mean, there are two different cases here, right? There's a case where they're within the trust domain, and I think the interesting one is when they're not. So if a UAS is not in the trust domain, you have to authenticate it. I still don't understand and have never understood, and maybe this is what you're saying, why, you know, if there's a TLS connection between the UA and the thing and it previously sent a digest authenticated request over that TLS connection, any subsequent messaging is authenticated.
Correct.
It's authenticated by virtue of coming over that TLS connection. It's not digest. Each message doesn't have to be digest authenticated, but it's still the message is authenticated. And that's a valid mode of operation for requests as well. So if that is the... I could have sworn somewhere that 3325 even allowed that to happen. So, okay, you want to go up and tell me why that's not authenticated?
Yes. Well,
it only authenticates the adjacency.
It authenticates the proxy you're talking to, but that's not what you're authenticating. You're authenticating a username here, which has, so you authenticate completely the wrong thing, right? Keep in mind, two proxies can send messages for different users between those two proxies over the same TLS connection. So which user did that TLS connection authenticate?
What you say would is you not have exactly the same problem on the request side?
That exactly. And wait, Colin, to your point, all actually you're trying to authenticate is the device within your trust domain. Once it is, 3325 completely allows it to generate its own PII.
No, let's not talk about that. If it's outside your trust domain, I want to talk about this case.
Yeah.
I assert that your claim that this doesn't work for responses, that same argument could be made for requests.
Just a minute. The fact that a message, ignore responses, let's just talk about requests. You sent me a request over a TLS connection, and your TLS certificate says that you're, you know, ACME. Okay? That has nothing to do with any type of authentication that 3325 might require. Right. 3325 requires you authorize that you understand who the user is making the call. So even in the forward direction, what you're talking about here has nothing to do with the actual topic we're talking about. Right.
That's true for UAs.
Adriel, back me up here, right?
No, that's true for UAs. That was my point about PSTN gateways, though. You can never authenticate their username portion when they're actually representing the entire global scope
of
the
network. It's just a network asserted thing. So presumably a gateway or an operator could make an assertion about some device they had. They felt it was that number, be it a gateway or something else, right? Was Eric trying to say?
But that's what I'm saying is the definition of a gateway.
So I think I wanted to reply to that on Jonathan's. I think the TLS authenticates a different thing than we're talking about here. But I was going to say that we've talked about this many times before. I don't think the draft really addressed any of the issues that have been brought up previously. There's been the ones about the reverse authorization that have been talked about before. I'm not even going to go in those again. There was ones that have been talked about many times before about the preferred identity stuff.
Yeah.
One thing I was going to talk about as something that Sanath and I have been, and some of the other cable labs people have been talking about for several years, actually, of a solution to all of this stuff is, you know, we want to get some sort of idea out eventually where when you're using outbound, so you know the TLS connection corresponds to a single user, then the TLS connection forms a consistent binding. Maybe there'd be a certificate, a device certificate for a UA that was used in the reverse direction to identify the request. So now you know messages coming back are coming from that UA and it corresponds to a single user from that. So we want to do something with user-based certificates and devices. Many cable modems already have a certificate, so you can see the cable lab's angle on this, and combining with outbound. And once you had that, then it becomes very practical to make the type of things that you'd need to do to make this work. And the only thing that we've been always waiting on to get that finished, we wanted to get outbound out the door before we started discussing a more complex thing that layered on top of outbound around with certificates. But I think there's good ideas on how to get the type of authorizations we need around that something like this would become usable. But I don't think this draft really addresses all the previously, brought up issues.
No, correct. And to be clear, this draft really is focused on saying if the device is within your trust domain, by definition, you should be willing to accept the PAI in its response because you did so in 3325. Like, that was literal text in 3325. It wasn't even implicit.
Well, that text is highly disagreeable, and there's been much discussion on that, and Keith has a certain point on it. And, we're ignoring all the previous conversation on that, and maybe that's fine. I don't think we should repeat it ad nauseum. I'm certainly not going to stand here and repeat it.
Okay. Yeah.
But there are issues there. Mm-hmm. Not everyone agrees.
Just to come back on Keith Drage, just to come back on the authenticated UA discussion. There is an extra case apart from just establishing the secure channel, the security association, which you get with TLS or the IPsec you get with 3GPP, AKA,
right,
or whatever. You've got to make sure the identity actually comes from the secure thing that actually provided the security credentials as well, which you can meet with a 3GPP UICC, but you can't meet in the general case. So that's basically, it is possible to provide it in response, even on an authenticated UA, in my belief.
Yeah.
But you've got that extra condition that you've got to make sure something happens securely in the UA.
Yeah, and I think John was actually looking for that use case to be put in there originally to defend that position, right? The 3GPP model for why you could put things in responses, but anyway, yes, I agree. I guess my only point is that there are other mechanisms to allow it as long as you can authenticate it.
John Peterson, this may be just the meds talking, but my recollection of the thing I always used to bring up when we talk about this was that I never really understood what the authorization decision was that you would make based on an identity and a response. And like, this is a non-trivial question, right? I mean, I think when we looked at things like, well, did this reach the guy I intended it to reach? And that's what the response is supposed to tell me. You know, I think I, at least many years ago, gave up on any notion of that being deterministic enough. You could really make an authorization decision of whether or not a person was the person who got the message is supposed to have gotten the message or something. Yeah, but rendering is not secure. Well, so when we talk about security and we talk about, you know, what the, you know, if this is intended to have a property that we use identity for as opposed to just an informational, hey, you know, maybe you can use this to think about. It's not a security mechanism at all. We don't need to like talk about it like a security mechanism. We've had this discussion before as well.
I don't believe I'm describing it as a security mechanism. It's almost like a call it ID.
Well, I mean, we're
display.
Talking about a trust domain, and you know, I mean, pre-authentication. Well, I mean, we're talking about all these security things that are.
Well, but it's
we
PAI,
don't have anything
right?
that we use them for. But the point is, when we design, when we talk about trust domains and authenticating UAs and so on, we do these things for reasons. There's some specific threat that we're trying to, but we're using these mechanisms to prevent. And I guess I brought this up a couple times before. I know that I've never understood what the threat is that we try to prevent in this.
Okay.
I'm out of time, yeah.
Yeah, I think the idea would be to try to address, I mean, all these discussions that even some people in the room may not be aware of and try to address them somehow and, you know, in order to try to move forward.
Actually. Okay, yeah. And thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.